Welcome to the Animal Voices Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. Today is Friday, December the 17th, 2010. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-hosts, Joanne Chang and Carissa Thorpe. Do you want to say hello?
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And we have a special guest, Alyssa, who's in the studio.
Welcome.
The holidays abound us again this weekend, so what would be more appropriate than speaking, say, of gift-giving for the animals? And yes, more cooking for the holidays, as we had a couple weeks ago. So please stay tuned until the very end, as well, as we have a special holiday Animal Voices surprise in store for you. So it's that time of the year again when I've been getting lots and lots of solicitations from all kinds of charities that I've supported in the past, as I'm sure both of or all of you have too, and as most of them happen to be from animal charities, and since we often have limited dollars to put towards good causes, especially at this time of the year, I thought we should highlight some of our top picks for gift giving to charities that benefit animals for the holiday season. So stay tuned to see what our recommendations will be. And for our feature interview today, I am very pleased to have a longtime animal activist on the show who does her activism through the conduit of food. And what better time of the year when food is all around us to discuss wonderful, healthy, colorful, and cruelty-free sustenance for the holidays. We have Colleen Patrick-Goudreau of Compassionate Cooks on the show with us today. You may already be familiar with Colleen's work, but if you aren't, Colleen is the author of the two best-selling cookbooks, The Joy of Vegan Baking and The Vegan Table, and is the founder of Compassionate Cooks, an organization whose mission is to empower people to make informed food choices, to inspire people to live according to their values and compassion and health, and to debunk myths about veganism and animal rights. Colleen is also well known for producing what sums up to be a positive and addictive podcast that I think has changed the lives of many in their views and actions towards how they think of and treat animals. And she is also the author of the brand new cookbook, Color Me Vegan, which just hit the store shelves as of recent. She'll be talking to us today about the philosophy behind her new book, and Color Me Vegan, and how to incorporate great vegan food of many colors into your holiday entertaining this year, as well as the social aspects during the holidays of dealing with veganism in a non-vegan world. I have just recently finished reading with much delight Colleen's book, Color Me Vegan, and it's another book that is worthy of making you want to give up all your daily responsibilities to hunker down in the kitchen and basically make all of the 150 gorgeous, clean, and colorful recipes from start to finish. I haven't done that yet, but very well may do so during my holiday vacation. And yes, listeners, you also have a chance to do the same, as we are giving away a free copy of this book to a lucky Animal Voices listener. All you have to do to win this book is to go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and under the Discussions tab, tell us what one of your favorite food colors is. It could be dark leafy greens, the bright orange of carrots, or the brilliant blue of summertime blueberries. You must not have won anything from us in the last year, and you must be able to claim your prize at the radio station in downtown Vancouver to be eligible to win. We are extending the deadline for this draw to be later than usual, so the deadline for your chance to win a copy of Color Me Vegan is going to be Friday, January the 17th at 9 o'clock a.m. and, sorry, 7th, January 7th, not 17th, and we will do a random draw for the winner on the show that day on January 7th, so please do enter, and good luck, and if you happen to not be connected to Facebook, you can also email your entry to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and we have Joanne now with our events.
Well, I'll be happy to taste the 101 recipes once you're done baking them, Allison.
105.
105. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be ready to taste them. Now for the events, Sunday, December 19th from 12 to 5 p.m., the veganproject.ca presents Get Baked Holiday Sale at the Main Space, 350 East 2nd Avenue in Vancouver. Are you guys going to that?
I am.
The veganproject.ca will be hosting this event where they, alongside with other talented vegan bakers, will be able to share their magical vegan treats with all of you. There will be hot apple cider as soon as you walk through the door, a plethora of vendors sharing their yummy vegan delights, and some of them are selling treats to raise funds for organizations. The best holiday music playlist you've ever heard, and Saint Nick himself available for pictures with kids and pets. Entrance fee is $2 or free with a healthy snack donation for the kids at Grandview Elementary. If you're interested in vending, please email meetus@theveganproject.ca for more information. Sunday, December 19th at 10 p.m. Pacific Time and Eastern Time, and the Passionate Eye television program on the CBC will be presenting the film Super Size Me. This will be on the CBC News Network for our Canadian listeners and anyone else who may have access to that channel. Ever wondered why America's waistline seemed to be growing at a startling rate? What would happen if you ate nothing but fast food for an entire month? Award-winning director Morgan Spurlock provides an insider's look at the legal, financial, and physical costs of America's hunger for fast food. Spurlock embarks on a risky journey to prove the physical and mental effects of consuming fast food when he vows to live solely on McDonald's, eating three meals a day. Eating three meals a day for a month. He establishes three basic rules: to only eat and drink items available over the counter, to eat every item on the menu at least once, and only supersize an order when offered. As the food bills add up, so do the doctor's visits as Spurlock puts his health on the line. So I'm sure you've all seen Super Size Me.
It's been a great film.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that his girlfriend is a vegan.
Yeah, I know.
Vegan chef.
Yeah.
And she brought him back to health after he almost killed himself on this diet. She mended him with a vegan diet. On Tuesday, December 21st, from 3 to 6 p.m., there is a fundraiser for the University of Victoria Rabbits. The Overleaf Cafe Bookstore at 1105 Pandora Avenue in Victoria. Join the fun on the winter solstice and learn more about the rabbit in mythology. Celebrate the coming year of the rabbit with quizzes, games, poetry, ceremonies, tarot readings, a raffle, an art sale, and auction. Admission is free. That sounds like fun. Only a toonie to enter each game. All proceeds will go to TRAX, the Responsible Animal Care Society, to send more UVic rabbits to the Wild Rose Ranch in Texas. To find out more about the sanctuary, go to www.trax-bc.ca/uvicbun.html. For more information on this event, please contact Dr. Mady Hilmo at mhilmo@shaw.ca, or you can give her a call 250-744-1761. If you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
Fruit Salad, Thursday nights at 7 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Always fresh and unexpected for over 20 years with hosts Aiden Saint and Sky. Juicy, in-depth interviews with musicians, writers, performers, queer organizations, and families. Find out how fabulous and varied queer life really is. A show for all sexualities. Expect the unexpected. Fresh fruit every Thursday night at 7 p.m. on 102.7 FM. Catch a live stream at cooperadio.org or on cable in Greater Vancouver and across Canada on Star Choice Channel 845. Contact us at queerradiovancouver@gmail.com.
I like that song. It's nostalgic. Anyway, so it's that time of the year when we're busy buying gifts for our loved ones, and it's a crazy time wading through the crowds of shoppers at the mall and just doing that whole consumeristic thing as I experienced yesterday. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about my purchases of gifts for others and for the animals as well. There are so many animal benefiting charities out there who take this time of the year to make a plea for their causes and to ask the public in the spirit of holiday giving to give them a gift that will go towards their work for the animals. And it's not to say that they just want the gifts. For the most part, they really do need them as they rely on donations to continue their charitable work throughout the year. And when I talk about animal charities, I want to clarify that I don't just mean registered charities for which you get a tax receipt if you're making a donation to a registered charity in your own country. I'm talking about the non-registered charities as well who still do some amazing work, and for whatever reasons they don't happen to have charitable status. And one reason, at least here in Canada, is that a nonprofit organization can't gain charitable status if it does a large portion of advocacy work, which is actually often some of the most important work there is out there for the animals, in my strong opinion. So please don't let the factor of whether you'll get a tax receipt or not influence your decision too much on where your animal charity dollars are going to. I certainly don't. And for your convenience today, we have some of our top gift-giving recommendations for animal charities to give you some suggestions on where to put your charity dollars towards, starting with Carissa.
All right. The two charities that I've chosen to spotlight for sponsorship this holiday season are Food for Life Global and the BCSPCA. According to their website, Food for Life is a nonprofit organization founded in India in 1974, tasked with the mission of bringing food and life to those in need through the liberal distribution of pure food prepared with love. Today, Food for Life is active in over 60 countries worldwide, serving more than 1.5 million meals with the aid of volunteers every day. Food for Life Global aims to support plant-based meal distribution to the disadvantaged, malnourished, and victims of both man-made and natural disasters alike. The organization's educational centers provide free or inexpensive plant-based meals, as well as counseling, yoga, and survival skills training. Another program is the Rural Academies for Youth, known as the Ray of Hope, which teaches youth sustainable agricultural processes. The reason I like this charity is because it's a vegan alternative to the typical outpouring of charities seeking contributions around the holiday season that propagate the myth that meat is the solution to hunger by buying a village or a family a goat or a calf. Really, the food necessary for those animals is of greater detriment to the families and villages, and it perpetuates man's dominance over animals, as well as puts the animals in the unfortunate position of being used for labor and no doubt often abused or neglected because they are seen as commodities and are in countries where animal welfare standards are not likely a priority. While I haven't donated to Food for Life myself yet, I'm interested in it because it is a way to help both people and animals by focusing on plant-based meals and ideals, working to change minds and fill stomachs in tandem. To donate, the Food for Life Global website is www.ffl.org.
I just wanted to say about Food for Life, I first found out about it earlier this year when the Haiti disaster happened, mm-hmm. and they were instrumental in donating vegan food to the people there. And we talked a bit about them on the show to send your donations there, which I did actually, because, you know, that's a great cause. Yeah. And I really like what you have to say about other organizations that propagate saying to send cows to Africa and that. And interestingly enough, on the Liberation BC blog this week, I read an article that someone wrote of a quote that a farmer had said, or not even a farmer, just someone from, do you remember where they were?
She was a farmer in India, and she was given a cow.
And it was a woman. I didn't realize it was even a woman.
She was like 60 years old, and she's like, I don't want...
Yeah, she said the cow eats more than we do. The cow is so much to manage, only gives us a little bit of milk a day. What are we supposed to do with this cow? If someone gave you a cow, like, what would you do with the cow?
And too expensive to keep a cow, even for us.
Exactly, and for really poor people, a cow is a burden, and that's what she said. Very interesting. Go ahead.
My other charity of choice, which I do donate to monthly, is the BCSPCA. While my vegan values are more in line with the Vancouver Humane Society, which I do also recommend donating to, but in the interest of time, we'll not be discussing, I choose to support the BCSPCA because they are the most well-known in the public eye, and for good reason. They're the only organization charged with the authority to enforce animal cruelty laws, and as such are what I see as well situated to affect change within society via the conventional routes that most people subscribe to. The BCSPCA conducts nearly 6,000 cruelty investigations each year and rely on donations from the public to carry out the work that they do. The BCSPCA also runs educational programs for children such as summer camps, activity days, and they host birthday parties as fundraisers, in addition to other events such as the annual Pause for a Cause walk that takes place in communities throughout BC every September. And of course, the BCSPCA is where you can adopt dogs, cats, rabbits, rodents, horses, donkeys, and other livestock from their many shelters located in communities around the province. To donate to the BCSPCA, visit their website at www.spca.bc.ca. Joanne?
Thanks, Carissa. So the two organizations I chose are more on the grassroots level because I think this grassroots work is very, very important within our community, and they're done by dedicated individuals, and there's no burden of overhead and all this, you know, bureaucracy that you have to get over. So all the money actually just goes to helping the animals. The first organization I chose is the Stop UBC Animal Research. It is an organization.
Great choice.
Yeah, we've had them on the show before, and these people are just dedicated volunteers who are focusing on exposing UBC for their use of animals, which they've been keeping quite secret about. The Canadian Council on Animal Care's most recent data shows that the number of animals used in science in Canada have risen steadily, with nearly 2.3 million animals in 2008, up from less than 1.8 million in 1998. As the home of a rapidly expanding industry of animal experimentation, UBC is at the forefront of this trend. This organization has just formed earlier this year, and they've been doing some tremendous work uncovering what they've been doing at UBC and just kind of translating documents to layman's language so people can understand what they're doing. And just perusing through their website today, which is stopubcanimalresearch.org, I read about cat experiments, songbird experiments, where they're capturing songbirds in Vancouver area and drawing blood from them and then decapitating them. Ugh. So this is very important work to expose what UBC is doing, because obviously if nobody's onto what they're doing, they can just do whatever they like. If you'd like to donate to Stop UBC Animal Research, you can go on to stopubcanimalresearch.org. You will find an orange PayPal button on the right-hand corner of every page of the website, so it's pretty easy to find. Or if you want to give them a call, 604-551-3324, you can also donate by sending in the check.
Yeah, they actually have a lot of needs that they're going to be needing a lot of money for in the mm-hmm. new year. So I can't remember what they are, but they, you know, they want to hire some staff, for example, because they're doing this. I know the main person, Brian, who I happened to meet last night. Mm-hmm. Hi, Brian. You said you're going to listen. And he's a wonderful person. He quit his job and yeah. donates. Like, I know he's working 16-hour days sometimes on this project, right? And mm-hmm. it's so for one thing, you know, they have money needs there, and they have money needs for a lot of other projects I know that they have coming up mm-hmm. towards this campaign. They are really, this is as grassroots as it gets, and they're really making strides, I think.
Right, and we are
get their updates a lot.
Dedicated volunteers trying to take down, well, not take down, but try to expose a big university with a lot of money. So mm-hmm. we need to help them with that. So if you just want to donate a check, Box 391 Station A, Vancouver is their address, V6C2N2. Okay, so my next organization is Hearts on Noses. Again, Hearts on Noses is run by one individual, Janice Gillette, and she has been on our show before as well. She's one individual with a huge heart. Hearts on Noses started in 2002 with her first pot belly pig, Willie, an unkempt stray she discovered on the property when she moved in. So ever since then, she's just been adopting more animals. And I don't know how many she has now. Do you, Allison?
A lot. I can't remember, because when I was there, I don't know, 5 years ago or something, she had 24. And it was something like almost doubled when I asked her about earlier this year. And she has a lot, and they move locations too, right?
Yeah.
So I guess there's more space, but she has a lot, and she does it all by herself.
She does it all by herself, and those animals are so well kept, and they look so wonderful in the area.
And she loves each and every one of them.
Yeah, they come into the house, and she puts blankets on them, and they you know, watch TV on the couch. So if you want to go on to heartsonnoses.com, you will be able to see all the animals, and you will be able to actually sponsor an individual. So their photos are all on the website. There's a pink button in the front page that says click to sponsor, and you can scroll through all the animals you want to donate
to. I've actually been sponsoring a pig named Pearl for years now. So
that's very sweet.
Yeah, and you know, it's something, I think I've talked about it on the show before, but I think it's $30 a month. And I kind of think to myself, okay, well, how much of my time is $30 worth? Maybe two hours of working at one of my paid jobs. Is that worth it? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Of course it is.
Definitely.
If it's saving an animal that's in need.
So you can donate by PayPal by going to heartsonnoses.com, or you can donate Canadian Tire money. They take that as well. Mm. Or you can contact them through the contact form on the website. On to you, Allison.
Yeah, so the first charity I'd like to highlight is Farm Sanctuary. If you're a regular listener to the Animal Voices show, for sure you've heard us speak a lot about Farm Sanctuary and the amazing work that they do there. Farm Sanctuary is North America's very first farmed animal sanctuary and was started in 1986 by Jean Bauer and Laurie Houston, who basically started it from nothing and has since then grown to two largely established rescue and sanctuary locations in New York State and Northern California.
They're the biggest in North America.
Yeah, and the first. I personally haven't been there before, but I am a regular supporter and get their emails and magazines highlighting the work that they are continuously doing for the animals in rescue, educating to the public, and government advocacy to make conditions better nationwide for farmed animals. We also interviewed Jean Bauer on the show a few months ago, and if you missed that interview, please do go find it on our website, animalvoices.org, from September 24th, 2010. I highly recommend listening to this fantastic interview, and if just listening to that interview doesn't convince you enough to make a donation, I highly recommend reading Jean's new book about the life of the organization called Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food. And that's what they really set out to do, is to change the hearts and minds of people by rescuing these depraved and feeling creatures and letting them live out the rest of their lives in happiness at their shelters, and then having those animals act as ambassadors for those who have never personally connected with a farm animal before. Now, I love the suggestion they're promoting at this time for the holidays, and that and this could actually make a great holiday gift for someone you know. You can purchase a gift adoption of an animal for a loved one. With each adoption, your gift recipients will receive a unique and memorable sponsorship package that includes a personalized adoption certificate and a beautiful color photo of the animal that you've adopted and to who the money is going to care for. You will experience the joy of knowing that you have made a difference for a farm animal. There are sheep, chickens, ducks, calves, pigs, goats, and more to choose from, all with varying adoption fee levels. I myself am the proud parent of a chicken at Farm Sanctuary. To adopt an animal or to make a one-time donation to Farm Sanctuary, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where I've posted the links to each of these options. They're fairly lengthy URLs, so I'm not going to say them now, but you can also go straight to Farm Sanctuary's website as well, which is farmsanctuary.org. And finally, dear listeners, our number one charitable organization recommendation for you to make a gift donation to is the Animal Voices Radio Show. We've got one person cheering for us. Hopefully lots of other people, though, in Radioland. In case you didn't know, yes, the radio station from which we broadcast, 102.7 FM Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, Canada, is a registered charitable organization, and we rely solely on your donations to be able to stay on the air and to provide you with weekly quality programming on a myriad of issues about animals and the vegan lifestyle. And we really do work hard on it to provide you with this information as education and advocacy for the animals, which would otherwise go unheard over mainstream and corporately funded radio airwaves. None of the crew here at Animal Voices gets paid for what we do. We are volunteers, and so that means that your donation dollars go straight to the overhead fees that are associated with logistically putting the show on the air. We hope that you will find it in your hearts this holiday season to make a donation of any size to Co-op Radio by going to cooperadio.org, clicking on Donate Now, and ensuring to indicate that your donation is going to the Animal Voices show. So happy gift giving, everyone. I just want to mention, check out our website, animalvoices.org, for the links to all of the places that we have mentioned.
And the Animal Voices Co-op Radio membership makes a great Christmas gift for the vegans on your list, too.
Good suggestion.
Yeah. So a reminder to our listeners that you're listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. In the news today, according to Eric Marcus's blog, vegan.com, Howard Stern might be leaning towards veganism as his sidekick, Robin Quivers, has already subscribed to. Stern reportedly said on his December 14th broadcast, "I don't want to know my food. I need to get involved eventually in this vegan shit like Robin, because this is killing me." The comment was the conclusion to a discussion he was having with one of his employees, Richard Christie, about his experiences growing up on a farm in Kansas, and was inspired by a message Richard's parents left him about his mom killing a buck and his dad killing a doe while hunting. Apparently, they regularly play such messages on the show, and Richard's parents not only hunt, but also scavenge for roadkill. After touching on a previous story Richard had told about the calf he raised as a boy for over a year, and the calf's dog-like mannerisms, such as coming when he was called and following Richard around before being slaughtered and eaten all winter, Richard talked about his current pet, betta fish, and how his love for his fish makes him feel guilty when he eats fish or sushi, saying, "I'm so attached, I'm at a point where I can't eat fish." Let's hope Howard does go vegan. Think of the PR possibilities. Maybe Richard and his parents could join him for a holiday dinner next year.
That would be vegan. Pretty amazing. I used to listen to that show all the time, and all they do is make fun of vegans. And when Robin went vegan, it was like, whoa, what happened there?
Maybe it was subliminal messaging.
Did she get respect?
Oh, no. They just hammer each other for things. So
didn't think so.
The BCSBCA reported this week that Stacy LaJeunesse of Tumbler Ridge was sentenced to a 10-year ban on owning animals. The charges stem from 2007 when LaJeunesse voluntarily surrendered the 34 badly neglected huskies that were in his care following an investigation by SPCA constables. The dogs seized included 23 puppies ranging in age from 2 weeks to 3 months and 11 adult dogs. According to BCSPCA constable Debbie Goodine, who led the investigation, there was no evidence of food for the animals on the property. She also said that the dogs were extremely emaciated, scoring only 1 to 1.5 on a body conditioning scale of 1 to 5. The puppies were also in very poor condition and were suffering from internal parasites, adding that the animals were also entangled in heavy chains and that there was evidence of psychological distress, including ground wear from excessive pacing. Happily, the dogs have since been rehabilitated and adopted into loving homes. While LaJeunesse was required to pay $841 restitution to the BCSPCA and the supposed 10-year ban on owning animals, the judge who handed down the sentence has allowed him to keep the 12 dogs currently in his custody on the condition that he provide them with adequate care, as well as provide proof of ongoing veterinary examinations for the dogs and allow BCSPCA inspections within 24 hours' notice. Also, PETA.com has posted a statement released from Brookhaven National Laboratory that says NASA has informed Brookhaven that a proposal involving primate research at the NASA Space Radiation Laboratory on the Brookhaven lab site should be removed from consideration for experimental time at this facility. The announcement comes after much protesting and over 100,000 letters, phone calls, and emails from activists speaking up for the animals. Way to go. Because of the efforts of many, dozens of squirrel monkeys will be spared from the cruel experiments involving harmful doses of radiation, followed by isolation in cages and years of behavioral experiments to measure the damage caused by the radiation. And finally, according to a survey on allrecipes.com, trend analyst Robin Avney, veganism is one of the top 11 trends predicted for 2011. The survey says that people are making the switch for a myriad of reasons, of course, but the number one reason was for health, followed by losing weight, saving money, and saving the environment. Respondents also said the abundance of vegan recipes available have been an inspiration for the shift. Just to prove how mainstream veganism is quickly becoming, Good Housekeeping magazine is publishing a vegan cookbook entitled Simple Vegan, which is set to be released in March of 2011.
I saw that. Yeah. Crazy.
They've previously published several vegetarian cookbooks, but this will be their first totally vegan offering.
Wow.
Well, thank you very much for that, Carissa. Yeah. For our feature interview today, we have Colleen Patrick Goudreau on the show. Colleen is the author of the two best-selling cookbooks, The Joy of Vegan Baking and The Vegan Table, and is the founder of Compassionate Cooks, an organization whose mission is to empower people to make informed food choices, to inspire people to live according to their values of compassion and health, and to debunk myths about veganism and animal rights. Colleen has appeared on the Food Network and is a columnist for Veg News magazines and a contributor to National Public Radio. She joins us today during the holiday season with a brand new published book called Color Me Vegan. Hello, Colleen, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me back.
Well, thank you. Well, Colleen, although we have never met before, from following your updates on Facebook and listening to your podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought, and now from reading your new book, Color Me Vegan, I really feel that I know you pretty well, and I've also enjoyed reading about your relationships with both animals and the food in your life. You seem to be constantly bursting with energy and joy towards living a compassionate life, and I guess this has appropriately parlayed into doing the work you do with your organization, Compassionate Cooks. I'm first curious to know if you can describe in words where this passion and energy comes from, not only for great vegan food, but for treating animals with love and respect.
Well, I think it comes from where it comes from for most of us. You know, I think we're born into this world innately compassionate, and I think we very much don't want to harm anyone. I think that's really natural for children, and I think it's something that we all encourage. Adults encourage it. Adults are happy when a child is kind to an animal. Adults are happy when, you know, when they're sweet and compassionate, and they're kind of nervous when the animal is hurt, you know, when the child hurts the animal. So I think it's this really innate, fundamental characteristic of human beings, and when we start to desensitize children and we start to strip away at that compassion, I think it's really one of the most detrimental things that we do to children and then essentially to adults, because we grow into these adults where we're taught to compartmentalize our compassion. I mean, it's so remarkable to me that the messages we get are to squelch our compassion, when really we would do so much better as a society if we were able to really just let that compassion express itself. So thank goodness, I don't know what really drew me to read Diet for New America. I've talked about this before. I know you know that. And then eventually Slaughterhouse and many books in between. But thank goodness, because I could have gone my whole life, like so many of us, completely asleep and desensitized to what really was, a really tangible compassion that I had for animals. And that really just extended to everything else, you know, from there.
You know, I think you're right. We all start out the same way as children, having compassion. And then, as you say, we decompartmentalize it, and it kind of disappears. And then perhaps we're woken up by books like you read. And I've read those two same books, too. I'm curious if you can just tell our listeners what it was about those two books, especially Slaughterhouse. That I think that was the first animal rights book I had ever read that told about how farm animals are treated. Can you talk to us a bit about how those really had a profound effect on the way you thought?
Yeah, and because, like I said, there were other books, but these two really had the most impact. Diet for New America, because it was the first book I picked up. It was the first time I had ever seen the photographs, I had ever read anything about the way the animals were treated, and it really was just the beginning of my journey because of that book. And you know, it's interesting because the book really focuses on factory farming and how horrific it is and how horrifically the animals are treated. But it really, you know, ultimately I would tell you today that it's not for me about how the animals are treated, but that we even raise them for human consumption in the first place. So that book really just planted the seed for me, because I continued to eat dairy and, you know, cow's milk and eggs even after I had read that book. So it really was just the beginning for me, and I stopped eating land animals. Several years later, when I read Slaughterhouse, that had the most impact on me because as a compassionate person, I was just so incredibly appalled.
Did you bawl all the way through it like I did?
It wept. I mean, it was so painful. It was so painful. I mean, you know, I could read like a page at a time because I was just crying the whole time. And what was so striking for me was not the slaughter. That's horrible enough. But it was this culture of violence that we create in this industry, whereby we pay people to be completely desensitized and sadistic and violent. And it was that really woke me up, because the things they would do, the workers would do to these animals, besides just slaughtering them, which most of us are offended by just on its own, were all about having unchecked power, because mm-hmm. they could do what they wanted to the animals who didn't move as quickly as they wanted to, or, you know, these are living animals who have their own desires, and you're trying to kill them very quickly, and if you, you know, are stressed at all, you're going to take it out on the animals. And so that was the most offensive thing to me was the torture that they inflicted upon the animals and the sense of just the desensitization that is created in this very inherently violent culture. That was what was so impactful for me.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. I'd like to perhaps change gears and talk about your new book, Color Me Vegan, of which I've read the entirety of now and have fallen completely in love with. I haven't had a chance to make any recipes from it yet, but certainly will be doing so over the holidays. There's so many recipes I want to make. Can you tell us how you decided to write this book and how it stands out on its own as a cookbook based on color?
Well, you know, I've been teaching for a long time and just really wanting to empower people about how to live as healthily as possible. And one thing I know for sure is that people are really disempowered and they are really confused about what really is healthy. And the thing that I've been teaching for years to kind of whittle it down is just eat by color. It's really the simplest way we can make the most healthful choices. And I thought this would make a really helpful cookbook and a really beautiful cookbook, breaking the whole cookbook up by color.
Yeah, and why is it important to consume foods from the whole spectrum on color? Can you touch on that?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, all the different plant foods contain so many different phytochemicals. They've identified hundreds of phytochemicals at this point, and there's still hundreds they haven't even identified or really gotten into. We're really at the beginning of this research, which is so exciting. So all these phytochemicals, one way they reveal themselves is through color, and so we can detect the highest concentrations of these colors in the foods by looking at them. So, you know, so most of us have heard of beta carotene, and so we can detect the beta carotene in the carrots and the yams. Lutein is a yellow color that's in corn. Beta cyanines are the red color that's in beets. Anthocyanines are the blue color that's in blueberries. So just by picking a variety of colored plant foods, we're taking in all of these different phytochemicals, and some of them act as antioxidants, some of them do other things, and the different antioxidants play different roles. Some of them concentrate themselves in our eyes, you know, lutein, for example. We've heard of lycopene being helpful for prostate cancer. It's because that phytochemical concentrates itself in the prostate. So quite literally, by eating a variety of colors, we're really, you know, benefiting our bodies because of the different roles that these phytochemicals play.
One of the things I find notable about this book is that the ingredients used for the recipes are quite common. They are just vegetables, but so many kinds of vegetables and common seasonings, but yet the recipes look so amazing and delicious. I think anyone reading this book would be inspired to start eating healthier. And what I like about this book is that you focus on eating a whole foods diet, and that is to say unprocessed real food. Can you talk to us about your philosophy of eating real food and thus living a life of what you would call a joyful vegan?
Well, sure. You know, again, in demystifying what it means to be vegan, I really emphasize the fact that quote-unquote vegan food is fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and mushrooms and grains and legumes and herbs and spices. It's food that people are already familiar with. That's how I eat, and that's what I teach to other people, not only to eat the most healthful food, but to say, look, this is just food that you already have in your refrigerator. We don't have to call it vegan. If you take it out of that box called vegan, you realize it's just regular food. And so I really do encourage people to eat as whole, you know, foods as possible. It's the healthiest for us, and and it's the most delicious. I mean, all the flavor is in the plant foods.
So let's talk about greens. I was really surprised and impressed, I must say, to read in the book that you try to eat a pound of greens a day. 1 pound. We all know greens are good for us, and we're supposed to get 5 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which undoubtedly you do, but most people don't. So can you offer us some tips on how one might practically work in a pound of greens into their daily diet?
Sure, and remember I said that my goal is to aspire to eat a pound of greens a day. So that
I'm just picturing you just shoving a head of broccoli into your mouth until it's done, and there's your pound.
No, and I don't want to make it seem like that is like, you know, it's a rigid goal. But really, when you make a goal like that, even if you fall short, you're taking in so much more than you would if you didn't make that goal. So if we make the goal a pound, and that includes raw and cooked, then we eat a lot more than we would otherwise. So I really encourage people to eat salads. I think when I first started advocating for veganism, and especially in terms of the food and cooking classes, et cetera. I probably steered away from green salads because I didn't want to just perpetuate the myth that all we eat is salads. But now I'm just in a different place and just eat salads. Just, I really encourage people
salads
to eat salads
good.
As much as possible. They're fantastic. I mean, they're so packed with nutrients, and you can really vary the salads too. You don't have to make it with, you know, romaine lettuce every day or whatever your favorite lettuce
no
is.
No iceberg lettuce.
Well, definitely no iceberg lettuce. I'm out of New Jersey now, and that's what I grew up with. So definitely no iceberg lettuce. But just the darker the greens, the better. So making chard the base of your salad, making spinach the base of your salad, kale the base of your salad is really great. And I literally throw greens into everything. And you're right. I mean, I actually do snack on, you know, things like broccoli and carrots, and those are the kinds of snacks I'll have throughout the day, besides nuts that are just sitting around, which are just incredibly tempting when they're just sitting around. I grab handfuls, which can be dangerous. But I put greens in everything. If I'm making a soup, I put greens in. If I'm making a stew, I put greens in. When I make Mexican beans, and I'll do this pretty often for lunch, just for a quick lunch, I'll just heat up some beans with some water and chili powder and cumin, and I throw kale or chard in. So everything you can do. And then also in Color Me Vegan, there's one of my favorite daily snacks, which are kale chips, which yep. are so easy to make, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, I discovered kale chips recently. Very easy to make, very delicious. And don't forget about throwing the greens in your smoothies as well. I've been doing that as well. Can you tell us about carotenoids, what colors they provide, and why are salmon pink?
Why are salmon pink? Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I talk about a lot in education, in educating people about nutrients, because most people think that the nutrients we need are animal-based, I encourage people to realize that the nutrients we need are plant-based. And that comes down to all of it. Name a nutrient, it's plant-based. The only nutrient that's not plant-based that we need is B12, which is bacteria-based, still not animal-based. When it comes to color, all of the color that's in the plant foods obviously are generated through the plants, but even in the case of something like salmon, the animals themselves are colored because of the plants that they eat. Now, salmon are carnivores, so they eat other animals too, and they eat phytoplankton, and they eat some plants as well. But krill is a shrimp-like critter that they eat, and the krill feed on algae. And algae has just tons of wonderful nutrients, including omega-3 fatty acids, which is why the salmon gets the omega-3 fats to begin with. But they also have these carotenoids, one of which is something called astaxanthin. And that is this antioxidant that turns the salmon pink. So the bottom line is, all of this is about plants, and to go through an animal to get to the nutrients that we need makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's not an efficient process.
No.
You've told us about greens. Can you give us some tips on just simple ways to add other colors to your food consumption in general?
Sure. And in Color Me Vegan, at the end of each chapter, so each chapter is broken up by the color. So at the end of each chapter, I have a page on how to add more red, how to add more blue, how to add more orange.
And I love that. It's just practical ways.
Good. Thank you. Good. And then there's, you know, just how to add a variety of color. I mean, again, just add vegetables as much as you can. Instead of having just a plain pasta dish, throw some vegetables in there. Instead of having just a plain pizza, put vegetables on top of your pizza. Make vegetable-based sandwiches. Add fruit to oatmeal, yogurt. I mean, any chance you have to just throw plants in, and that includes, you know, grains as well, but, you know, especially fruits and vegetables into your foods is the best thing we can do.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. In Color Me Vegan, what are some of the recipes in this book that are your favorites and that you would recommend for wowing people over the holidays?
It's hard to pick favorites. It's hard
because they're all your babies, right?
It's so hard. Exactly, and I love all of them. I really am so proud of the recipes in this book. And I cook out of my cookbook, so I use my cookbook.
You should. You have like hundreds of recipes.
Yeah. So I just made the miso fennel ginger soup the other night, which is so easy and so fantastic. I love soups and stews. You'll find those on my menu a lot. I told someone the other day who asked me that question that a secret is that the recipes that I choose to be photographed, I choose them not only for their aesthetic purposes and how photogenic they are, but because I know that people tend to make the things that are photographed in the cookbooks first. So you can take a look at the photographs in the book, and those are some of my favorite recipes. But and as far as the holidays, you know, I really do encourage people to eat seasonally as much as possible as well. So you can just go to something like the orange or red or yellow chapters, especially the orange and red this time of year. Those are the autumnal colors. And you can find the peanut pumpkin soup, the baked persimmon slices. Persimmons are still in season right now. Roasted orange beets, which you can use red beets as well. There's the seared tempeh with cherry balsamic reduction sauce. There's an apple cranberry and sausage stuffing. So trying to find the recipes based on the season, you can really do that pretty easily by just turning to the color that's kind of associated with that season, you know?
You're making me hungry now. With regards to eating vegan, you've said that the most challenging thing is dealing with the social aspects, but I know that by now you've had a lot of practice with this and you make it your mission to help others with this challenge. So especially during the holidays, we have these social aspects to deal with. What advice can you offer to people in this regard? And should one be scared to bring up the subject of eating without animal products to people in social situations?
Personally, I don't think so. I really encourage people to stand up for what they believe in. You know, we underestimate our family, we underestimate our friends, and we underestimate our own values. You know, if we had an allergy, we wouldn't have a problem asking for what we wanted. Why should it be any different if these are our ethics, you know, or driven by health or whatever? I mean, we have no reason to be ashamed or apologetic about things that are so profound and affect us so deeply. And more than that, if that's not enough, you know, people really respond beautifully when we just ask for what we want and say, this is who I am, and do it unabashedly. I can't tell you how many times I just say to someone that I'm vegan and they start asking me questions and they start expressing their own concerns or their own guilt or whatever it is, and we wind up having a beautiful conversation. And I've seen time and again family rise to the challenge and make beautiful meals that accommodate the vegan, but also learn some things. You know, we can't assume that our family members know what it means. And we can't assume that they've gone through the same process we have. This is a very sensitive subject for us, but we can't assume our family members really know how much it means to us unless we tell them. So we have an obligation, I think, to be eloquent and truthful to our family members so that they can actually have the chance to show us that they want to accommodate us, because I think all too often we just get into this mindset of, well, you know I'm vegan. Why haven't you risen and helped me? Well, I don't know. Maybe you haven't told me what to do, or you haven't asked me. Tell me what to do and I'll help you. And I think if we take that approach, we'll find that we have a lot of success with our family and our friends.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, being friends and family, they should want to help you, and you really shouldn't be scared to speak up. And I think it's often a touchy subject with a lot of people, but for someone like myself as well, and maybe the others in this room as well, who've been eating this way for a very long time, it was a learning curve for me, or I guess at the beginning. I'm so different now than I was when I first stopped eating meat, and I'm not one to be afraid to speak my mind anymore. Definitely a good message. What is your approach towards cooking for people who aren't vegetarian, or say attending holiday events where other people are hosting?
Make great food. I mean, that's the bottom line is, you know, if it tastes good, they will eat it. That's the absolute bottom line. Sometimes it's hard because you want them to know right away that it's vegan, but you also don't want them to have their own block about it, especially when it comes to baked goods. But really, honestly, I mean, people are so much more open now than they ever have been before. The word is so much more demystified than it ever has been before.
Yeah, Carissa was saying it's the most mainstream trend now. Is that what you said?
It's one of the top 11
top
for
trend.
2011.
I love
at least
I
they're
love
calling
that.
It something.
exactly. So people are really intrigued and they're really open to it. So really just make great food. And that is, I mean, I never use the word convert because it's not my intention when I do this work, but really it is the great converter. Food really is the thing that makes people go, oh, that's what it tastes like. Oh, that tastes fabulous. Or that tastes really familiar. And I can do that. And it really changes people's perception.
It's probably why you wrote a whole book on vegan baking too, right?
It's exactly why I wrote that book.
Right. I can bet. I've been reading that book, too. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's great. So I'd like to talk about your podcast, Vegetarian Food for Thought, and I would be remiss not to mention it on our show. I've listened to many of your podcasts now. I think maybe all of them. I'm not sure. And I make a point of listening to them as soon as you put them online. Mm. They are very thorough and very informative, and I feel that you put your heart and soul into them, as with everything you do, I think. Whenever I finish listening to one of your podcasts, I feel that it's been such an enriching experience, which may sound like a silly thing to say, but it's true. Can you tell our listeners what your podcasts are about and what you strive to do in them? And give us some examples of some past podcasts.
Well, thank you, first of all. Thank you. That means a lot to me. I do put everything into that podcast.
Oh, yeah, I can tell.
I do, and I just, you know, I don't want people to listen to me when I talk about these issues, in the sense that I just want them to make sense to people. It's pretty simple. You know, live compassionately by reflecting your own values in your behavior, and live healthfully by eating by color. I mean, it's kind of whittled down to that. And so what I do is really ask people to live up to what they say their values are. You know, I thought I was a pretty compassionate person, and I was eating animals. I didn't see the connection until I did. And now I still consider myself a pretty compassionate person, but my behavior is matched with that ethic. And so the podcast really addresses everything. It's the ethics, the social aspects, the spiritual aspects, the nutrition, the food, you know, the conversations that we have with people. And it's also allowed me to incorporate other passions of mine, which include film and literature. So I've been able to find some amazing short stories and poetry that reflect an animal consciousness. And so it's really special to be able to share that with people. I mean, they can go to vegetarianfoodforthought.com and see all the episodes. There are, I think, about 120 now.
I definitely haven't heard them all then. That's great, because I'm always looking for podcasts to listen to. So I'll get all the ones I haven't heard. I'd like to end this show with a memorable quote from you, from your most recent podcast, which was about traveling in Ireland. You said, "I think there are higher principles than gustatory pleasure, and I'm happy to choose nonviolence and compassion over hedonism or gluttony, knowing that I'm making a peaceful contribution to the world, and a healthful decision for my body is worth what someone might consider inconvenience. In the grand scheme of things, I want to look back on my life and know that I had my priorities straight, that I put my money where my mouth is, that I walked the walk and was true to what I believed in. It's not a sacrifice to be vegan." And with that said, Colleen, thank you so much for coming on the Animal Voices show today. I encourage our listeners to look up Colleen's podcasts and books and more on her website, compassionatecooks.com. You mentioned vegetarianfoodforthought.com as well. And there's colormevegan.com.
So there's joyofveganbaking.com. There's vegantable.com. It's all there.
Thank you so much, Colleen.
Thank you, Allison.
Great speaking to you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Same to
Take
you.
Take care. You've been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. And just a reminder, after this wonderful interview that you arranged, Allison, thank you so much, because I've been wanting to have Colleen on the show for a long time. I just want to remind our listeners that we are giving away the book Color Me Vegan. And I see that on Facebook, Allison has already started a discussion in the Animal Voices Vancouver group page. If you just go in there and just put your name in. Is there a question they have to answer?
Yeah, what's one of their favorite colored plant-based foods to eat?
Cool, that's an easy one. Or you can send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com and let us know what's your favorite colored plants to eat. On next week's show, I will be interviewing Evan McGraw, the head baker at
Champs.
No way!
Wow!
Yes.
Evan, he's the head baker?
He is.
He's come a long way.
He has. This is the newly opened vegan bakery in Brooklyn, New York, the only one in Brooklyn. And I will also be interviewing Andrew Butler from Animal Aid UK. He'll be joining us to speak about his very creative campaign selling humanely raised and free-range dog meat at various UK farmers markets. Yes, I said he has a booth selling free-range dog meat, from beagle nuggets to chihuahua jerkies. Want to find out what that's all about? Then please tune in next week on Christmas Eve at noon. It's a show that you don't want to miss. And finally, we have a special treat for you today.
Let's hope it all works out here.
We're leaving you with the special rendition of the song Silent Night, performed by Allison on the clarinet and Carissa on vocals. Happy holidays, everyone.
Silent night.
Precious love is born.